Trying to bring you to the phone.
I'd like to call the February 23rd, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development Committee in order. And we have a joint hearing today. We're much larger than normal.
And I would call together a joint meeting from the Human Services and Women's Wellness meeting together.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. We're going to be hearing House Bill 2559 jointly here in a minute, and I will open that public hearing momentarily. Before I do, just by way of explanation, this bill will create a task force on gambling in Oregon, and this is an issue that is of common interest to both of our committees. And so the Human Services and Women's Wellness Committee, chaired by Representative Tomei, is joining us today. That's why you see our numbers doubled here on the dais. And if we could, perhaps for the benefit of our electronic audience, introduce ourselves. Many folks are not used to our new members, and perhaps starting on the far right.
I'm Robert Gillen.
Representative Kotek.
Representative Tina Kotek, House District 44 North and Northeast Portland.
Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3, which is most of Josephine County.
Representative Gene Cowan, House District 10, Central Oregon Coast.
Andy Olson from the Albany area.
Carolyn Tomei, House District 41, Milwaukee and Southeast Portland.
I'm Brad Witt from House District 31, which is the northwest corner of our state.
Chuck Riley, House District 29, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove.
Bill Barnhart, Central Lane and Linn County.
I'm Paul Holdy, House District 8, South Eugene and South Central Lane County.
Fred Girard, basically the House District 17, North and South Santiam Watersheds.
Right. Thank you very much. And with that,
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Representative Lim as well.
Yes, I think Representative Lim, are you going to be testifying this morning?
Yes, I'd like to testify, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 2519.
I can be at the beginning of the hearing, though.
Okay.
Okay. No, that's right. Andy. I lost him.
Whose committee is it in?
It's in ours.
Oh, they needed it right.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Thank you. Of course, our interest in the workforce and economic development on this bill is based on the economic development money which the lottery provides. And there is a concern that perhaps some folks participate maybe a little bit too much, and because of that, this may lead to some problem gambling, and therein lies the interest for our committee. And Chair Tomei,
our committee feels that this is a public health issue when people are problem gamblers or compulsive gamblers, and we see the problems not only with the gambler, him or herself, but also with their families and the rest of the community, and including their employers. And we've seen instances in the newspapers that hit the front pages when people are embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars from employers, and we determine later that many of these folks have a gambling problem, and that's where that money goes. And we hear from the neighborhood and from the community, these are wonderful people, what happened here? So our interest is in understanding what happened and how we can help prevent that.
Thank you very much. This bill, very briefly, calls for the creation of a task force on gambling in Oregon. It would take a look at all of the gambling that occurs in our state, legal gambling, that is, the effectiveness of problem gambling treatment programs. It would do so by a cost-benefit analysis, taking a look at the social costs and comparing and contrasting those with the lottery's economic benefits, and after assessing the efficacy of our treatment programs, the bill then would provides for a report of findings both to the legislature and to the governor. With that, I'm going to call up as our first witness, Dale Penn, from Director of the... Excuse me. Thank you very much, Vice Chair Riley. I'm going to first call up Representative Lim, please, Vice Chair of our committee.
Appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning.
The Chair Witt, the Chair Tomei, it is my great honor that testifying on this House Bill 2519. And since the inception of this lottery of our state, the problem of the gamblers growing like a snowball. We have seen so many people hooked into this gambling problem. This is a good citizen working as a salesman, blue collar, white collar, and then many women and senior citizens. Sometimes, I'm sorry, I forgot to, you know my name though. My name is John Lim from District 50. This has been my great concern since the inception of this lottery. And what I understand, 5% of the population of our state are the addicted gamblers. And also, we have a lot of people, even though they are not addicted, you know, they are losing a lot of money. And also sometimes they lose their jobs. Sometimes they, because of the gambling problem, they divorced. And then the children sometimes, they know how to take care of the children. State has to step in to care for them. So currently Oregon State about earning $1.1 billion in biennium. Even though we are winning that much money, we need to find out how much we are losing from the social cost plus many others. And when I ask these specific questions to the Lottery Commission and the Lottery Department, they don't have any clear figure because it's so big. And so finally I thought maybe we might have to do some study on this issue. So I introduced this legislation, and as I was thinking, instead of this my bill under my name, I thought if this could be a committee bill, I thought it's more clout and more power, is that ownership belong to all of us instead of one person. I'm not the person trying to get any credit. Yes, I'm the good guy, I did it. That's not the issue. I just want to attack the problem and hopefully find some reasonable solution. And then what's the effect in the future is going to be? Are we going to rely on continually incomes, revenue from this gambling? And it will continue to grow. That they bring in new gambling machines and then bringing new revenue and asking more money. We are going to use this money for more education and plus many other pubs, salmons, plus many other programs going on. Is this the right direction for us to take? I'm not saying that the lottery is not necessarily all bad, but we want to find out which directions we are going to go. If we want to go, we need to have some kind of a plan. What is the backfire? What kind of problem are we going to expect? At least we need to create a task force and the study and the report to the legislators and the governor, and let's design it, how we are going to get there. I think At this time, gambling is getting bigger and bigger. 9 Oregon tribes, they all have gambling casinos. And then they intend to come to our state land to open up the American Indian gambling facility in the state. And already two people in the Lake Oswego area, they like to change the law to have one of the largest gambling facility someplace in Portland area. And at the same time, 16 miles from the Columbia River, Washington State, they are going to have nation's second largest gambling entertainment in Washington State. How that going to affect our state? Because we are going to lose a lot of money. What plan do we have? I think this is the time to find out where we are and what we are going to do. Without this study, I don't think we can find out the clear answer. So with that in mind, I hope look at this issue. It's a very serious issue. Not only people are ill with the gambling addictiveness, but I believe the state also is ill. If someone have a drinking problem, it could be fixed. If someone have a drug problem, it could be fixed. But if someone hooked into this gambling problem, it is very, very difficult to fix and to be cured. This is a mental disease. It is not just a gambling addict or a gambling problem. This is a truly mental disease or disorder. And we need to find out that the near future, the answer of this problem, so we can correct the course if we could. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Chair Tomei, I'd like to extend the opportunity for our guests to ask the first questions.
Thank you. Is there anyone on our committee who has a question of Representative Lim? I think you did a great job of articulating the issue, Representative. Thank you so much. And anyone on?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and Vice Chair Lim, we would hope that you'll join us here directly.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up Dale Penn, Director of the Oregon Lottery, and as he's coming forward, I'd just like to note that Director Penn has been kind enough to flag for us a constitutional problem with the bill as it is currently written. He has also been kind enough to suggest a path or potential paths out of the wilderness for us so that we can hopefully get this bill on track so that it comports with our Constitution. With that, Mr. Penn, welcome, and thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Tomei. My name is Dale Penn. I'm director of the Oregon Lottery. I have provided you written testimony, and I'm here simply to talk about a precise legal issue, not to take a position on the issue of the bill, problem gambling. I think that you will hear at the panel after me some of the efforts taking place in Oregon, and the lottery has participated in those efforts to a great degree, and I think you'll hear some information about that. But there are a few things that have to be pointed out about this proposed bill as it is drafted. It places the task force in the Oregon Lottery and then mandates that lottery staff will provide the staffing for the task force and pay its expenses. Not an unrealistic goal or an inappropriate kind of thought. However, when you analyze the legality of it, there is a case, and it is Ecumenical Ministries versus Oregon State Lottery Commission. And this is about prior legislative enactments involving lottery dollars. And the basic premise is that the lottery is constitutionally established. And the Constitution states that there are basically three pots of money involved with the lottery. One of those is the prize pool. that's really irrelevant to our discussion today. Another pot is what's called administrative expenses. And that is the pot that this bill is saying the lottery's administrative expenses should pay for the task force. And that is the focus of the Ecumenical Ministries decision. And then there's a third part of the money, which are the proceeds that are transferred to the legislature to be used for public education, not relevant today. Public parks, not relevant today. Watershed improvement, not relevant today. Or economic development. And the proceeds, you have the capability, certainly, under this constitutional construct, to decide that problem gambling is part of economic development and to do a study about the impact of gambling on the economy of Oregon. And I believe, although I'm not your legal counsel, I don't want to give you legal advice, clearly that is an arguable use. And after the ecumenical decisions or decision by the Oregon Supreme Court, throwing out funding for problem gambling treatment as unconstitutional, you passed a statute that said we will use some of our proceeds, and that is the pot of money that the legislature has total control over as long as it's in those four purposes. And certainly that is a basis for funding for this bill if you choose to do so. I quickly wanted to, with that overview, I wanted to just highlight some of the reasoning of the court, because this proposed draft is almost directly on point to what the Supreme Court said could not be done and declared an earlier statute unconstitutional. And it related to two purposes, and that was gaming enforcement and problem gambling treatment in communities. And the court basically said administrative expenses must be those that are authorized by the Lottery Commission basically for the daily operation of a lottery. And they can spend money on a lot of different things for those daily operations. And I will tell you, you will hear that the Lottery Commission has authorized and has spent money on the issue of public education and problem gambling from an advertising perspective. Because the Lottery Commission has taken the position that if we are a revenue-raising agency, and that's what the Constitution says the lottery is, business-wise and constitutionally, it's appropriate to say that our player base, we must be careful in how we interact with that player base. It doesn't do us any good as a revenue-raising agency to burn out that player base with a significant numbers of problem gamblers, have them go bankrupt, and then you do not have a base now to sell your product to. So with that, keeping that point in mind, the commission has been very active in the area of problem gambling in Oregon, and you'll hear about that. But that is a commission decision, and the court went forward and said, how about gaming enforcement? Certainly gaming enforcement does involve games that the lottery is involved in, but they said no, that is not an internal implementation or management focus for the lottery. Another important point, though, they drop a footnote and say, don't misunderstand this ruling. The Lottery Commission may choose to spend some dollars in gaming enforcement because it's important to the security of the lottery and the operation of the lottery. So then secondly, they go forward and then talk about problem gambling, and they say, again, although the need for such programs, gambling addiction, may result in part from the operation of the lottery, expenditures for mental health programs to treat gambling addiction also are not expenses or costs of the internal implementation or management of the lottery. Accordingly, this statute is unconstitutional. And so, at the next session, the legislature repealed these statutes, and the following session moved out and started delineating some of the proceeds that the lottery produces for the legislature for problem gambling treatment. So that is the issue. I'd be happy to discuss it with you. I asked for guidance from our general counsel, Department of Justice, clearly told me the Ecumenical Ministries is on all fours for this situation. We have several other statutes. I wasn't aware of this statute earlier, but I attached an opinion, a formal attorney general's opinion, it takes several months to get those, on an issue where the judicial branch wishes us to collect fines from winners. A good purpose, again, but it falls under the same analysis. So the judicial branch acknowledges that, and they are going to pay for collection costs so that we can collect those winnings for fine payments. But it's the same principle. It's just page three of that opinion sits again with the same analysis of why the lottery can't be the mechanism directly as an administrative expense and part of the lottery to do this. However, you may use proceeds that the lottery directs to you. Certainly you can use general fund, obviously. But that is the legal issue. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I apologize for bringing this at this point, but as I said, I just learned of this statute in the last several weeks.
Chair Tomei, does your committee have any questions?
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Penn, I'm aware that in Nevada, which is, of course, known for its legal gambling, they also have a television program, not a program, but on television they do advertising for problem gambling. And so I know that the Lottery Commission does advertising the games that are provided by the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
So would that be within your purview, under that kind of advertising, to also advertise for problem addictions?
Chair Tomei, definitely. The Lottery Commission has taken that position in the past, and we do advertisements now. And I think you will see one. We really have two different segments the way we approach this. We approach it from a problem gambling perspective, those who are addicted to gambling. And we have a very pointed message, and I'm not going to go into all of the issues you'll hear at the panel, but we make a real effort to publicize the 1-800 number for help for the treatment that is available.
Is that a part of the ads for gambling? Is
yes.
that what you're saying?
Chair Tomei, yes. We do have a separate line item that we deal with problem gambling. And then
not a separate ad. It's part of the ad for gambling. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, we do in every ad finish the ad with lottery is not designed for investment purposes, and there is a statutory phrase that we use depending on what type of advertising it is. And so every gaming advertisement that we would do, we would give that disclaimer.
Right.
And radio, television, billboard, yes.
What I'm asking, I guess, is something different. Would it be within your purview to have a separate ad saying that if you have a problem gambling, that this is where you could get help? Would that
yes.
be within your purview?
And Chair Tomei, we do that, yes. That is a campaign that we have, and we have a moderated gambling one, which I think you will see
great.
Today. But
And maybe you could stay on so that if we have questions after we see the other presentations, I would appreciate
certainly.
That.
Certainly, I'd be happy to stay. And the reason I don't want to be the final word on this is Dr. Jeff Murata from the treatment program is certainly very much aware of this. And then my assistant director for marketing is part of this process and been very active in problem gambling. She is here to be part of the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Any other questions? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Penn. The 1% towards gambling addiction is in statute?
Chair Tomei and Representative Kotek, yes, it is. And I couldn't give you the history of that, but I believe it is an analysis by the legislature that out of the proceeds, we believe that some problem gambling treatment is appropriate for economic development in Oregon. I believe that's the legal analysis, but that's a guess.
Follow up. Thank you. And so if we do what you propose, which looks like transfer some dollars, for example, to DHS to do this, to implement this bill, then I would assume it would have a fiscal, it would have a referral to Ways and Means, and maybe that's a LC question, because there would be a modest cost to compensating DHS, for example, for their staff time.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying is you cannot do that out of your administrative costs.
Chair Tomei and Representative Kotek, that's correct.
Okay.
Under the Ecumenical Ministries decision, yes.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm going to ask one more question before I entertain other questions. Do you use the full amount that you are allocated for treatment? There is a certain amount that is allocated for treatment. Oh, what's that smile about, Mr. Chair?
Well, excuse me. I'm sorry. That is a question that Chair Tomei that should be addressed to Dr. Murata. We do not do treatment. We simply provide the dollars that you allocate for treatment.
And what I'm asking is, do all those dollars then go to Dr. Murata's program for him to use as is appropriate by the Constitution?
Chair Tomei, over the years, it has been differing levels. Last session, the legislature did allocate the entire 1%. And the Lottery Commission wrote letters to every member of the legislature asking the full 1% to be allocated.
Thank you, Mr. Kern. Any other questions?
Thank you, Chair Tomei. Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chair Witt. In reading this bill, your problems then would be with line 29 on page 1 and line 3 of page 2. If we were to amend this, then to include something that, say, the Oregon State Lottery Commission shall provide staff support to the task force paid from out of lottery proceeds or something to that effect, that sort of language is what you're looking for an amendment. Is that kind of the way I'm reading this?
Chair Witt and Representative Gerard, I believe that line 4, just that it's created in the lottery, the line that you mentioned in line 29, that the lottery provides staff support, and then on page 2, lines 2, 3, and 4, where we pay administrative costs, I think all of those are problematic. And I believe that, my opinion really is important on that. It may be best for this task force not to be connected to one of the gambling entities. It may be better to be in a neutral position to do this study. But that is your prerogative.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Mr. Penn, there was a task force some years ago. I should have the information, but I don't. How was that funded?
Chair Tomei, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
And we should find that out. Thank you.
Representative Colby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Penn, would it, solve some of our problems if this task force was created under the Oregon Economic Development Commission?
Chair Witt and Representative Holby, there would be no constitutional issue for the lottery if you chose some other agency or device. That's correct.
And follow up?
Please.
If I'm not mistaken, the economic development gets money from the lotteries, but since it's passing through into the general fund and funding the Economic Development Commission, there wouldn't be a constitutional issue with that, in your guess is.
Chair Witt and Representative Holby, that's correct. Those are the proceeds that you have control over as long as they fit one of those four areas.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Director Penn?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Hey, Penn, glad to see you again here.
Thank you.
So do you believe, in your opinion, this is about the right time creating the task force, a study on this gambling issue in our state, and then try to find out the direction where it's going, especially since the introduction of this line games, and the state revenue out of this gambling is grown quite a bit. And I think it will continue to grow and level out. And I'd like to hear your opinions on this creating the task force. This is the right thing to do.
Chair Witt and Representative Lim, the Lottery Commission, and since I've been director, we have been very active about the issue of problem gambling from the perspective that I shared with you earlier. We think it's an important issue. Certainly have no issue about should it be studied. There are lots of forms of gambling, and in fact, it is the issue of gambling is being studied. I think your panel will give you some information about a prevalent study that's been ongoing for a number of years, trying to see is, even though the access to gambling has exploded with the internet, with the growth of the casinos, with the lottery, with illegal gambling, with everything else going on, even with that explosion of gaming, what is the prevalence of problem gambling in Oregon? Those are all important issues, and there is work going on in that area. I think the panel will be able to share it with you, but it's certainly something to watch for the state of Oregon throughout its history.
Follow-up question,
please.
Mr. Chair. As I stated already, we have nine casinos from the nine Indian tribes. And then as the state continue to expand lottery gamblings, adding more gamings, and certainly this is a competition mode with the Indian gaming. And so I'd like to know your opinions and American Indians casinos, they are deeply concerned, I'm sure, while the state enjoys more revenue, and this could be the competition, but is that a good competition or bringing more money, or I just don't have any sense what is going to be in the future. And in addition to my questions, what is that the lottery commissioner's plan for the Washington state? What's that the La Cinta area, in case if that is operational, what is our plan to counter that plan? Do we need to have our own casinos in our state, or just hands off, that's Washington state, we have nothing to do with it? And what is the plan of our state from the point of Oregon Lottery Commissions?
Chair Witt and Representative Lim, that's a tough question. Certainly, their entertainment and gambling as part of that entertainment is a very competitive industry and is continuing to grow. TV poker, everything about gambling is increasing. And as far as competition, is there impact when a casino opens? Is there impact on local lottery retailers? Absolutely. We really think that within about a 20-mile radius of a casino, it's very difficult for lottery operators. So when I appeared before Ways and Means Committees and Revenue Committees, those of you heard me, in the handout that I gave the Workforce Committee, I identified a risk for the future of revenue from the lottery is the casinos in the Portland area, both the private casino that you talked about from the people from Lake Oswego and the La Center casino within 15 miles of downtown Portland. It will impact sales. Again, however, our attitude and the Commission's attitude is that we want to have a diverse set of games that appeal to as many Oregonians as possible. Our attitude is we want to have a lot of people playing a little, not a few people playing a lot. again, from a problem gambling sustainability approach. So we are trying to have up-to-date games, exciting games, things that people want to play, but as far as trying to get in direct competition with a casino in La Center or in downtown Portland, all we can really do is to try to have popular games. And so that's the attitude we're taking. We cannot take a political position on a constitutional amendment for a private casino. We can't take a political position about the federal government and its relationship with the Washington tribes. But my intent in identifying it as a risk is to make sure that the legislature is aware of that potential impact on the revenue that we could transfer to use proceeds.
Thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
My thanks to both chairs, and thank you, Mr. Penn, for being here. I'm particularly interested in the whole idea of that you just expressed about the most a number of people playing a little. I must admit that I've been amused by parting with some of my money with video poker, and I might even play more if I wasn't so scared of getting lung cancer. But my concern really is not for the tribe casinos. It's more how prevalent the sign is in every bar and tavern and restaurant that, you know, as you just drive from here to Lancaster. And I'm trying to get to a question because I have so many thoughts on this, but I wanted to ask you that, you know, I always wonder who's addicted here, if it's our state or if it's the folks that are unfortunately coming in and giving their last dime to the machines. But Chair Tomei was asking you about your outreach to folks who are addicted and using your advertising money. And I've kind of monitored that just privately because I've been interested in the ads. And I think you do. I do quite a bit to get the 800 number out. My question is, could you address, or do you think that the task force could address, the idea of integrating the message in the machines themselves so that maybe every 5 minutes the number came up? Maybe after the machine monitored, and I would assume this could all be integrated with software, after you blow $20, it says, are you sure you want to blow another $20? Why don't you take a breath, or why don't you go out to the parking lot and take a breath? To that, can you speak to that?
Chair Tomei and Representative Gilliam. I can give you a list of places that are smoke-free if you did want to play. But at any rate, I will say that we have tried to be active in that issue of gaming, and I think you'll hear some more of that. But for instance, when we went to line games, the Lottery Commission stated, on these new machines, with these new games, we want to post, have the ability for the player to see this in dollars and cents rather than credits. Because, remember, the casino experience is to take you into a fantasy world. It's credits, it's not money. You don't know what time of day it is. And so that's the way those machines are set up. And so we do have that, that it will also has the ability to show a clock so the player knows, hey, I've been playing here for 2 hours. And so those were two things that we did. We have recently posted on every video machine the 1-800 number. And so we also have materials at every retailer. So we have tried to be active in that area, and you'll see some of our new messaging that we're putting out. I would really like you to hear from the panel because they can give you much more about this, and certainly Dr. Murata can give you much more from his perspective. But we have tried to be very active in the area.
Thank you.
Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's gratifying to hear that there's efforts, but I have to say I like Representative Gilliam's idea of a pop-up video that says, you know, maybe you need to go take a break. So I don't know if that's doable. I just thought, I think that's a great idea. The more we can do, the better. Thank you.
Representative Holby.
I have nothing right now.
Okay. Representative Lynn, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt, again. And as I read in the paper, Mr. Dale, Penn, the issue came up of the dominant use. Did I pronounce correctly? Dominant? D-O-M-I-N-A-N-T?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lynn, dominant use.
Yes, okay.
I'm sorry.
And this came up, the decision came up about 50-50.
Yes.
And then can you explain to us how that happened and what was the previous of the percentage and why it's changed to 50-50?
Yes. Chair Witt and Representative Lim, the other important part of ecumenical ministries, the first part of the decision, tries to decide what is a casino in Oregon. And this lawsuit was really designed to say that since video machines come from casinos, the movement by Oregon into using video machines, at that time poker only, we are creating casinos, any location where there is a video machine. That was the line of attack. The Oregon Supreme Court looked at what is a casino and tried to define it and basically said, with the limits that are in place, the number of machines and all the regulatory framework of the Oregon Lottery, line of sight, and a whole different section of regulations that we have, video machines by themselves are not a casino. But they basically said that we know a casino, if you're 100% gambling, that's a casino. But someplace this side of 100%, you're still a casino, but you hit a point, then you aren't a casino, even if you have gambling. They didn't give us a percentage. They simply said, we believe that a location whose dominant use and dominant purpose is gambling is a casino. But they didn't define it. The Oregon Lottery tried to define that and initially started out with a definition that said 60% of your revenue from gambling was permissible, but if you go above 67%, you're a casino. You can't do that. That was changed to 60%. I know last session you introduced a bill to make it 50%. When I came to the lottery, I recognized that issue, read the case myself. I believe that reliance just on a number wasn't appropriate because the court never talked about a number and they wouldn't, I don't know that they would validate 60% or 50%. But I tried to adopt a common sense approach to it. And so that's the publicity that you saw because the commission just adopted the rule about 3 weeks ago. And so we have a list of 10 factors. How do you promote yourself? What is your percentage of sales? And a variety of other issues. What's your square footage? Do you have food? How do you promote that food? A variety of different factors really to take common sense view. And we have said that if you get above the 50%, if you're below 50%, you aren't a casino. If you're above, then we've got to look at you and really see what's going on. So that's what the rule says.
Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Yeah. I'm from Southern Oregon, and one of the concerns I've had from constituents is that when you walk into a place that is doing line games, and I've never been in that place that they're talking about, you walk up to the counter to buy the food and they say, why would you want to buy food here? Go across the street because our food's lousy. So it's hard for me to wonder how they can say any percentage of their revenue is from food. And so I guess I question that. Maybe is that rationale being played out, or I mean, how can you Or do you look for specific complaints and say, well, this institution is not complying?
Chair Tomei and Representative Maurer, yes, and we've initiated a reporting process that will happen every June, and then we will begin auditing. We wanted to have the rule in place, and so we have this process. We have heard those complaints, and that really was the issue if you read the articles that came forward, those types of reports. And we believe that this rule will give us the capability to work with that retailer and say, listen, if you aren't selling food, then are you just a gambling place? But all of them do have sales of products, including many of them sell lots of cigarettes. They sell other products that get them to percentages, but that's where reliance only on percentages doesn't really get at the issue, are you a casino? So that's why I wanted to look at common sense indicators, and we believe we'll be able to use that rule to either work with those locations so that they do have legitimate food, or say you're a casino, so you're not going to be able to continue to operate.
Madam Chair, are we past the good idea cutoff point? I guess I might, you know, suggest that you exclude cigarette sales in those facilities. That's all.
Maybe we should move to our panel.
Just one more question here from Representative Girard, and then we'll
actually, I got a comment first and then a question. The comment is for Representative Gilliam. I'm a little bit concerned that he's upped his gambling problem by electing to play for the big bucks in the legislature. The second thing I have is actually a question for Mr. Penn here. When I was here in 93, we were a little bit concerned about what we termed baiting, and that was that the lottery, especially in video poker, it's not a for random chance. Is it not that there's actually a chip to predetermine what's coming? And so sometimes we get real close to a flush more often than what would be statistically possible. I'd like you to address that issue.
Yes, Chair Witt and Representative Girard. It is a random number generator, and so it is not predetermined. You can buy machines that are predetermined, but one of the things about the lottery that I appreciate is that we do have all these machines hooked to a central computer. We control, certify, make sure that they run appropriately, that they are random, that they aren't manipulated. So I think those are all plus things. There is the capability and programming to do what's called near-miss programming so that every time you lose, but you just one more little turn and you would have won. We specifically, when we ordered our games, we specifically said we do not want near-miss programming. And so that's another one of those factors the commission took into effect when we were talking about clocks and credits.
Can I follow up this one?
Please.
Well, the second issue that we had also was in the recommendation on video poker that comes down. You know how, at least I haven't played forever, but they used to have a recommendation when the first cards were dealt, and then there would be a recommendation.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, like, for example, if you got an ace of spades and an ace of hearts, and then a king of spades, queen of spades, and jack of spades, it would recommend that you kept the two aces. It was predicated on the probability of payout and not on the probability of what the total payout might be. Mm-hmm. Is that still the policy of the video poker?
Chair Witt and Representative Girard, that is a very technical question. I'm going to have to get back to you on that. I guess that's okay. The only thing I can say. I will say that poker, we were 100% poker, and that has moved with line games. We're probably about two-thirds line games now and one-third poker, but I'm going to have to just research that.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Penn, thank you ever so much for coming this morning. We certainly appreciate your candor, and am particularly pleased that you have and appreciative that you have shared with us some suggestions on the constitutionality of this bill, and for that I thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. With that, if we could call forward Dr. Marauder and the panel, and while they're coming forward, earlier we gave everyone an opportunity to introduce themselves, and I know that Representatives Gilliam and Lim did not get that opportunity. Vice Chair Lim, you were in the audience at that time. If you'd introduce yourself and your district, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt, for the opportunity. My name is John Lim, a state representative from Gresham area. Formerly, I served in the state senate for 9 years, and then I moved to the House in serving as a second term.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. And Representative Gilliam.
I don't deserve this. Thank you, Chairman Witt. It's Vic Gilliam, and I'm from District 18, serving Silverton and Malala.
Thank you. Panel members, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Let you proceed at your pleasure.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Chair Tomei. My name is Jeff Marotta, Problem Gambling Services Manager with the Oregon Department of Human Services. I very much appreciate this opportunity to present to you this morning, and I'm honored to do so. The panel that we have assembled for you today consists of myself, who will provide an overview of gambling and problem gambling in Oregon, mainly from statistics and perspective. Then I have with me Carol Harvey, the Assistant Director of Marketing from the Oregon Lottery, who can talk about some of the lottery's efforts to mitigate harm caused by gambling. And Marcia Matoso, who is a provider who can share with you some of the experiences of the people who directly provide the treatment for problem gamblers. And then following our, the three of us, we have also in this audience who will come up, three citizens, what we call consumers of our services, who can describe to you firsthand the effects problem gambling has from an individual perspective, and also the way it might impact other societal perspectives from, again, that personal perspective. So that's kind of a little overview. So if you'll entertain the idea, I do have a presentation here that I'd like to show you. And then if you want to ask questions as we go along, or if you want to wait for our panel to be done, that's you can direct me on that.
Thank you.
So the implications of gambling in Oregon, it's a very important question. There's a lot of uncertain answers, and this presentation is going to try to address some of those answers, which gets to some of what Representative Lim was stating in terms of we need to know more about this issue because it is a very important one. I'm going to provide to you an overview of gambling, the gambling environment in Oregon, some of the implications, some of the actions that we're doing to mitigate harm, and also how we may move forward in terms of striving for balance. Well, Oregon has more forms of legalized gambling and easier access to gambling than almost any other state, and people often don't recognize what a large gambling state Oregon is. But we're also, fortunately, recognized as a national leader when it comes to prevention, harm reduction, and the treatment of gambling problems. As you heard, gambling in Oregon is growing. It's growing at a tremendous rate. Back 5 years ago, we already were gambling at rates 25% higher than the rest of the nation. 2003, there was legislation that made way for a 20% increase in the number of video lottery terminals. 2004, the ninth tribal casino opened. 2005, the lottery expanded into video slots. And 2006, lottery exceeded $1 billion in sales, which a large part of that accounted for the success of the video line games, where there was a 24% up in sales for the VLTs from the previous year. And in the background, there's a lot going on as well, as you're aware of, in terms of the popularity of poker, internet gambling. So this is just a taste of some of the expansion that we've been observing. With the tribes, they operate over 6,000 electronic machine games or 131 tables, almost 3,000 bingo seats, and a number of poker tables. The Oregon Lottery operates, these numbers kind of shift around quite a bit, so they're footnoted as to what point in time they were collected. Over 11,000 video lottery terminals in over 2,000 locations, and overall there's over 3,000 lottery retailers in the state. In terms of the overall industry share that the kind of major players have, the Oregon Lottery has 58% of the market share. Indian gaming casinos have 35% of that market share, and then 7% go to other operations, such as paramutuals. There's many benefits that gambling brings, and I do want to feel it's important to provide somewhat of a balanced perspective. Some of these benefits include revenue for valuable services, assisting in keeping taxes down, bringing jobs and that support small businesses, responding to consumer demands. The majority enjoy gambling without serious harm, and tribes gain and share from the economic benefits. However, there are many costs, and they are related to when gambling does become a problem. Most of those costs can harm, as Chair Tomei was stating, that we do view gambling problems as something that harms not only individuals but families and communities. We do believe it's a public health concern. From the latest prevalence study that was conducted in 2006. There's an estimated 74,000 problem pathological gamblers in Oregon who are adults. That's not including under 18. And this is the way the continuum kind of looks in the breakdown of the different types of gambling activities that occur with our population. This is all based on past year gambling. 22% had not gambled within the past year. 65% had gambled, but their gambling wasn't causing any consequences to them or others, significant consequences. They might have lost a little money, but they were functioning just fine. 1.7%, their gambling was creating some consequences. However, it wasn't to a degree that was creating a significant amount of functional difficulty. It was creating some issues. And then about 1%, these individuals would be classified as pathological gamblers, where the effects of their gambling was quite devastating to themselves, families, communities. And again, the total number we're looking at for adults is about 74,000 in Oregon.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I did my arithmetic right, that adds up to 89.7%. What happened to the other 10.3%?
Revenue for you.
I think your math is better than mine, Representative Bernhard. Must be the what I did is I deducted out, so the no gambling proportion must be larger.
Thank you.
Thank you for catching that.
I'm in a bigger group than I thought I was in.
Problem gamblers. They are often high functioning. Very bright, they're usually employed, they're often not your typical users of social services, they often enter treatment later than other kind of treatment-seeking populations, later in life, and also later in terms of how they have gambled at problem levels for an average of about 5 years before they come into our programs, and their problem is much easier to hide than other addictions. One can't gamble so much that they generally will, you know, pass out or show signs of intoxication. There's several social consequences related to problem gambling. This is some of the data that we collect at Department of Human Services. Out of the 1,700 people receiving publicly funded treatment in Oregon last year, 18% indicated suicidal thoughts, up to 10%, we believe, have made an attempt. The average gambling-related debt was over $23,000. And when we combined all the debt from about 1,700 from the 1,700 people, it added up to $27.6 million. And by the way, this just represents a small portion of the total problem gamblers that we believe are out in our communities. 60% reported that they jeopardized or lost a significant relationship or job, and over 23% committed illegal acts to obtain gambling money.
Dr. Murata, help me understand. So with these statistics, are these statistics from people who have self-reported as gambling problems?
Chair Tomei, that is correct.
So there are probably a larger proportion of folks who have a problem who have not self-reported. Would I be correct in assuming that?
Chair Tomei, that's absolutely correct. We believe that this represents about 3% of the people that are out in our communities. However, they do represent the more extreme group, those that have a more severe variant of a gambling problem.
I guess, again, I wonder, are these people who that you have identified, who've self-identified, but I would assume that there's a larger group that has not self-identified that would not be included in these statistics.
Chair Tomei, that is correct, that these statistics only represent those 1,700 people who presented for gambling treatment.
Thank you.
We believe that problem gambling contributes significantly to domestic violence. Some studies have found that between 25 to 50% of spouses of pathological gamblers have been abused. We also believe that many children are affected by the effects of problem gambling. Some studies show that 10 to 17% of children of problem gamblers have been neglected or abused. And there's other impacts as well. As these children do age, we find that they have an increased likelihood of becoming pathological gamblers, and they also have higher levels of other kind of problematic behaviors. The social or the economic and financial impact, that is something that's actually very difficult to accurately assess. I think if you had 10 economists in studying this issue, you're going to get 10 different answers. But this is the one that is most often cited, and that's why I'm sharing it with you. What this study found, and this was actually focusing more on states that had mainly casino-type gambling operations, each pathological gambler was creating about $11,000 in social costs. Each subclinical pathological gambler, or something we may call a problem gambler, was creating about $3,000 a year in social costs. And if those figures generalize to Oregon, and that's a big if, there would be a number of assumptions that would have to take place. We're looking at a social economic impact of about $449 million.
I'm going to ask another question, if I may. So the figures on the left came from states where there are casinos. It's not that you can walk down the street and find three places in your block on the way home that would have a line game. Is that correct?
Chair Tomei, that is correct. These studies were conducted not in Oregon. They were conducted Oregon's somewhat unusual in terms of the gambling landscape that we have here with convenience-style gambling. These were conducted mainly looking at problem and pathological gamblers that primarily used casinos as their form of, or as the place where they gambled.
Okay, I'm going to have a couple more questions. So they would have to go to a destination as opposed to just on your way home from work, you would stop by a place where there would be line games. I guess what I'm getting at is that this may be a really small number as compared to Oregon. The study that was done in states where there are casinos, that when gambling is so much easier to access in Oregon, that the problem may be much larger than what we could see in a state where someone would have to go out of their way to get to a casino.
Chair Tomei, that's it's true that there's going to be lots of regional differences, and that it's very unclear whether or not these numbers do generalize to Oregon. However, what this looks at is really what is the cost, what's the social economic cost for each problem or pathological gambler. Whether or not those costs are the same if somebody has issues with, say, a video lottery terminal as a tribal slot machine, that's a question that we need to be looked at. And one reason I'm sharing that with you is this type of information certainly doesn't take the place of, say, what was discussed earlier today with the task force.
Okay, thank you.
Now, again, just to present kind of the other side of some of these arguments, the American Gaming Association on their website states that there's little documentation of a causal relationship between crime and gaming. Gambling appears to have a net economic benefit for economically depressed communities. And again, this is mainly looking at casino-style gambling. And gambling expansion during the past 25 years has not contributed to a comparable rise in the prevalence of pathological gambling.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Doctor, I'm just that statement right there, there's a little documentation of the causation or relationship between crime and gaming. I don't get that, because it sure doesn't appear that way.
Chair to May, Representative Olson. This is a statement that's advocated by the American Gaming Association. The key word, I believe, in that statement is the causal one, that most of the studies look at correlations or relationships which don't show causality. So technically they may be right, but there are a number of studies that I could share with you that look at the correlation between gambling and crime, that gambling and availability.
Okay, thank you.
So another cause for concern is today's youth. And the reason I'm showing this picture, I think it's interesting that somebody would, and I don't think this is terribly uncommon, that somebody may pose their children in front of a slot machine or other forms of gambling today, yet they probably would do the same having them pose with a cigarette in their hand or with a cocktail glass in their hand. This is just, I think, an example of just how much gambling is viewed as a normative activity, as something that doesn't that doesn't cause harm, or it's not viewed as a risky activity. This is certainly an illegal activity, and you know, the kids, children are not allowed to gamble under the age of. I'm not sure where this is taken. But we're really looking at a kind of a new social experiment, and by that I mean this is the first generation to grow up where gambling is seen as the norm and as harmless fun. Where, you know, a generation ago, we certainly wouldn't have seen this product here, Pink Poker Night, you know, a game marketed to children, especially when marketed to girls. This is really a new age we're in when it comes to gambling's acceptance. This is just one of many stats that came out of the Oregon Healthy's teen surveys that demonstrate that kids who gamble are at higher risk for participating in other problematic activities. And in this particular graph, this is, again, one of many examples, eighth graders who gambled were twice as likely to be using alcohol in the past 30 days compared to kids who weren't.
On this particular slide, is there something that says kids who drink alcohol are more likely to gamble? This kind of slide bothers me. I think it's probably true, but it implies causality, and my guess is that there are some other causes, and both of these outcomes are results as opposed to being causes of each other.
Representative Riley, you're absolutely correct. This is not a slide that's meant to represent causality. In fact, I'm giving a presentation on this next week where it goes into much more detail on how we interpret this. And I think you're right on in terms of your interpretation. It's these are more activities that tend to cluster together with kids as opposed to showing any kind of directional. The reason why we do feel it's important is if parents have children that are gambling, that might be an indicator to talk with them, not just about risks associated with gambling, but risks associated with alcohol use, with and among other things. So let's talk about Oregon Problem Gambling Services, and this is kind of the DHS efforts to mitigate harm caused by gambling.
Madam Chair.
Just
a question here. You use the term problem gambling, and as opposed to addiction, is there a reason?
Chair Representative Maurer, yes, we purposely moved away from the term addiction to problem gambling because it was more inclusive. There's some issues framing problem gambling as an addiction. It limits the number of people we're talking about to those who kind of fit that addiction model, disease-type model approach. And when we move toward looking at this as a public health issue, we want to look at the way gambling impacts not only those who were at that extreme end, but those who had less severe forms of gambling problems. And so that's why that terminology is used.
Thank you.
We do get 1% of the 1% of Oregon Lottery revenues are dedicated to a gambling treatment fund. DHS administers this fund, and the majority of those monies are allocated to counties. Now, although 1% of the Oregon Lottery proceeds are transferred to a gambling treatment fund, one of the misnomers is that we actually have that money to spend, where the actual budget authority that DHS has over those funds varies from biennium to biennium. And this gives you an idea. The top line is what 1% of the proceeds equal, and that the pink line, that bottom line, is the amount of resources that we have authority to spend. So as you can see, there is that disparity there.
Could you please talk some about that? Why the disparity?
Chair Tomei, the statute calls for 1% to go into a gambling treatment fund, but it doesn't precisely say that 1% must be allocated to DHS for those uses. The other thing that happens is if DHS does receive a budget authority that looks like the full 1%, it's based on a forecast that was done in, say, May. And over the past several biennium, the Oregon Lottery proceeds have exceeded their forecast. And so part of that disparity you see there is it's the DHS budget sometimes is based on an earlier, it's based on a projection as opposed to what the true revenue is.
So and what I'm hearing, it's less about DHS is skimming someplace else. It's about forecasting and actual revenues.
Chairman, Representative Maurer, there's two factors here. One is just a timing issue, and it has to do with differences between forecasts and actuals. And the second one has to do with DHS doesn't always receive the full appropriation. As you can see, back in 2003, 2005, we received much less than the 1%. It's up to the legislature to allocate that money. That 1% set aside, that just kind of goes into a pot, but it doesn't. It's every biennium that the exact amount to be allocated to DHS in terms of its budget authority changes. There's a line that has been used, notwithstanding, so to say, notwithstanding ORS, this amount is allocated to Department of Human Services.
Okay. Well, I find that to be confusing, and I'm assuming that Representative Kotek is actually pulling this up. So we'll just drop that line for a moment.
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that in dealing with this line of questioning, it would be useful to ask the Ways and Means experts about that issue, because I suspect that's where the issue lies. I don't mean in this group.
No, I yes, thank you very much, Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much, Chair Witt. In conjunction with the gambling treatment amount, and if you know, can you give us what was the amount of advertisement in comparison with the treatment, if you know?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim. Ms. Hardy will be able to speak with you more about the marketing budget that goes toward problem gambling awareness and responsible gambling. That it's the Oregon Lottery primarily administers that campaign, where DHS administers the more the treatment and some of the prevention aspects of the system.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Nye.
Looking at the ORS that you refer, 409.435, to me it seems pretty clear that that the money that DHS has appropriated from the legislature needs to go to gambling treatment.
Chair Witt, Representative Maurer, it does appear that way. However, in practice, that's not what happens. What has occurred is in the Ways and Means budget process, which you're all more familiar with than I think I am, when the DHS budget comes out, there are expenditure lines, what authorized expenditures, and for the gambling treatment programs, it doesn't equal 1%. It's up, and the way that it's been kind of gotten around is using this notwithstanding clause. So notwithstanding that piece of legislation, they assign a different amount is assigned.
Okay.
It's in my view, a problem.
Okay. Thank you for that acknowledgement.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to press this a little further, in the continuum of gambling behavior slide we saw, at least there's an indication that we could have up to almost 3% just in the problem and pathological area. Mm-hmm. We're getting 1% of the gambling proceeds from Oregon to address the problem. Those may not be related, but I think it's interesting how little that seems to me, given the severity of the problems you're talking about. Of course, we always want to give you a chance to say you need more money, but if you had 2%, is the infrastructure of your program able to absorb that and immediately reach problem gamblers, or would there be a whole lot of staffing and other program issues? I mean, could you use the money immediately to reach more problem gamblers if you had more?
Chair Tomei, Representative, thanks for the opportunity to ask for more money, but you are hitting on an important point, and that is to double the budget, we don't have the infrastructure to I think fully utilize that. I think it could be spent. I'm not sure if we'd be able to spend it as effectively as what we're doing now. It could be done, but a more of a ramping up process, I think, would enable the system to kind of build up the infrastructure that would be able to utilize those monies more effectively.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Madam Representative Talent. Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow up on that question, if I might. Thank you, but I want to refer back to the previous slide that the majority of that funding goes into counties for addiction treatment programs. So that's really where the infrastructure is already in place, and I would respectfully suggest that counties would likely tell you that they could spend quite a bit more on these programs if they had it to spend. Am I correct?
Chair Tomei, Representative Cowan, I think you are very correct on that one, and I think the counties probably would have a different opinion.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, one last question about the research. Looking at the research that's been done, you refer to national studies in 99 and 2097. Would it be appropriate to ask this commission to do some research specific to Oregon, given some of the different dynamics and the gambling climate here?
Chair Tonight, Representative Maurer, it would be appropriate. The time you're referring to the task force legislation, I believe. With that piece of legislation, it looks like there was only a one-year time span. They'd have to really move to be able to accomplish all, to look at all these issues, I think, in a thorough way. one of the real problems here is we don't have the surveillance systems in place. Excuse me. What I mean by that is, for example, the coroner's office doesn't have a place that checks off pathological gambling was the reason for this suicide. We just don't have that information. So there would be a lot of kind of groundwork that would need to take place to accurately, I think, assess some of these issues. I'm just going to try to zip through my slides so I can have some time, leave some time for the other speakers. Real quickly, some of the things we do is treatment, prevention and outreach, quality control and evaluation, workforce development, and we rely very much on our partnerships with the Oregon Lottery, the Oregon Gambling Treatment Foundation, local governments, our main partners. This is just an overview of where we have treatment services available. The stars represent outpatient clinics, and we do have a couple of residential services represented with the blue triangles and the red dot. We have an extensive prevention outreach program, which includes our helpline. The helpline receives over 2,000 calls a year for help. They actually receive more, like 5,000 calls, but only looking at those that are calls for help, not asking for the winning lottery numbers. And 93% of those resulted in referrals. We have a continuum of care that we provide for Oregonians who run into gambling-related problems, ranging from a minimal intervention where they could receive a workbook and some telephone counseling, all the way up through extensive residential treatment services.
How many people would go into residential treatment?
Church of May, we just began offering that service, and currently it's an 11-bed facility, and it is at capacity and has been at capacity since the day it opened. So we're only looking about 11 people turning over every 30 days or so.
What do you think, how many beds do you think you need?
It's actually a harder question than I think if we had more beds, they would get filled. One of the things that we are very conscious about is trying to provide the minimal level of care necessary. And so I always have a concern about offering a service that might be somewhat more extensive than is required. I don't have a good indication of how many beds we need. It would probably be to double that. We'd be able to fill it, though.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Riley. Just a quick question about referrals. Do you get referrals from EAP programs, employee assistance programs?
Yes, Chair, Representative Riley. Yes, we do. We would like to get more, and we are actively trying to coordinate better with the EAP. There's a central, I can't remember the name. There's a new EAP state kind of
yes.
program, and we are in conversations with that individual who runs that association. It's an EAP association.
Okay, there's also a very prominent provider of EAP in like the Tigard area, and I'm just wondering if you're in communication with that private company as well, or just with the association.
You know, I'm not sure, and the reason I'm not sure is a lot of the activity does happen at the county level, and it may be that the outreach and prevention coordinator is in contact, and if they're not, I will assist that process.
Okay. I would like to see some effort put into all the bulletin boards and companies which say, here's your EAP line,
I'd like to make sure that they all say gambling problems are included in this.
Chair, Representative Riley, I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Thank you.
These are some of the stats. I'm just going to let you have those in front of you, so I won't go over them.
Could you go back to one slide that you did, maybe you went over and I didn't see it, gambling treatment enrollment, and you show family members and gamblers.
Yes. This slide here represents the number.
This
one. Oh, okay. I'm going to move ahead because we do have... Oh, did I skip over that?
Yeah. Skip it.
Thank you for catching that.
Well, maybe it's not there. But it was. It's very interesting to me that the proportion of family members as opposed to the gamblers. Treatment enrollment.
Yeah, Chair Tomei. Yeah. Apologize for not having that in the this presentation. It is in your handouts. There are many more gamblers that come in than family members. One of the unique aspects of the services we offer is these treatment services are without cost to the clients, and it's not only the gamblers, but it's also to their family members, and you don't see that in many other systems. We feel that's very important in this case. And we are actively trying to engage more family members in the recovery process.
And I understand, too, that often it's a family member who reports that there's a problem because they're finding out that the house payment has not been paid or the electricity, et cetera, and they become aware of the problem and then seek help. Is that accurate?
Sure, to me, that, I believe that that is quite accurate. And in many cases, we have, especially our helpline reports, that in fact is happening. It's family members that are calling in. Frequently.
Thank you.
Okay, just kind of moving in. So, results. Treatment is working. 81% of the clients reported either no gambling or reduced gambling at 6 months post-treatment. We feel that our prevention outreach efforts are working. Oregon is one of the few states that appears to have averted a significant increase in problem gambling prevalence while expanding legalized gambling. And we like to believe that in part due to the kind of the wisdom of the legislature and kind of setting up the current system that funds gambling treatment and prevention efforts and through all the efforts of the Oregon Lottery. So putting it all together, I believe really the challenge that we have is balancing revenue production against the potential social and economic damage. And there is quite a bit that needs to be done. As gambling continues to expand, we need to increase our efforts to kind of curb some of the social costs related to that expansion. We need to prepare to meet the challenges brought by the next generation of problem gamblers, and that is quite a concern of mine. And we need to develop statewide strategies for gambling in Oregon that strives for balance.
I'm going to take you back to the demographics of gambling treatment centers. So I'm assuming that you're talking about people who are in treatment, that the primary location for those folks who are currently in treatment is the lottery retailer and video gambling, 70% actually, is that correct? Rather than folks going to the casino, they stopping at their local lottery retailer.
Yeah, Representative Tomei, that is correct. That for the people who present to our state-funded gambling treatment programs, 69% of them, about 70% report a lottery retailer as their primary place of gambling.
Okay, thank you.
So that concludes my portion of the presentation. I'd like to hand it over to Ms. Harding.
Before we move on to our next two panel members, I'd just call your attention. We have about 25 minutes left here for our committee hearing, so if you would, please pace yourselves accordingly. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Tomei, Chair Witt, committee members. For the record, my name is Carol Hardy, Assistant Director for Marketing for the Oregon Lottery, and appreciate the opportunity to address you this morning. I have been involved with the problem gambling issue since about the mid-90s. I've worked for the Oregon Lottery since the late 1980s. My responsibilities at the lottery include managing the creation and delivery of messages to the public and our retailers regarding the issue of problem gambling. We work in very close collaboration with Dr. Murata, DHS, the treatment and prevention groups in Oregon, to develop strategies and messaging to help the public. The other place that I am involved is I am a board member of the Problem Gambling Addiction Treatment Foundation, which is a nonprofit group in Oregon, which is aligned with the National Council on Problem Gambling. We have very broad representation of people from the treatment communities, recovering gamblers, members at large just with particular interests. And that group is tasked currently with providing research back to the state to help us understand what's happening in our state, what are the things that are happening outside our state that have been effective, other learnings that we should be paying attention to as we understand this issue. They are also responsible for some outreach efforts. Again, they're connected to the National Council on Problem Gambling, and one of the things that we have done over the years have worked closely with the National Council and helped develop national messaging that has been used on their Problem Gambling Awareness Week website, and Dr. Murata wrote some of those materials. Oregon Lottery helped produce some of those. So we have been very active not only at an Oregon level but a national level. As Director Penn stated, there is direction from our commission to educate the public and the retailers to help them avoid problems and those who need help to direct them to get help. And this, again, is to ensure that we have a healthy, sustainable player base into the future in order to meet our mission of maximizing revenues for the state of Oregon to fund valuable services. We have several different efforts that I'll just talk to you briefly about. Probably the most visible that you may have seen out there is an ongoing campaign that we talk about the issue of problem gambling and what people need to do if they or somebody they know believe they need to get into a treatment program. And the goal of this campaign is to increase the number of people seeking treatment. And it could be a family member, it could be the gambler themselves, but there is a target measure in our annual business plan to increase the number of calls annually of the people seeking treatment. And we do measure the effectiveness of those campaigns because we get a report back from the Problem Gambling Helpline to say what was the call volume when you were on the air, what was the call volume when you were not on the air, and it helps us refine those messages and say what works and what doesn't. So I think we're, can you take the screen away? Do you want to bring that back to show? Okay. So what we will show you right now is a current campaign that, again, the specific goal of this campaign is to get people to call for help. And we have done a variety of these campaigns over the years directed to different audiences. This one we created to be directed to very diverse audiences because we know that the people that we are trying to reach represent very diverse groups of people. And again, the message to call for help is very important. That's the goal. That's what we want people to do. And it's also an opportunity in this campaign to showcase some of the warning signs that you may experience yourself or you may see that someone else is demonstrating. So this is a television campaign. We also have print ads that are, the message is identical. There are posters that we require our retailers to post in every location and a series of brochures that talk to people about problem gambling signs, about the treatment programs that they can receive free treatment at. And again, those are required posting for our retailers. I'm not sure we have sound here, though. Don't know. So each of these people, I apologize for this, but each of these people is saying, Lying to hide your gambling, that's a call for help. Spending more time gambling with your children, that's a call for help. Gambling with your rent money, that's a call for help. And at the end it says, call for help, gives you the 1-8-772-STOP-NOW number and says that treatment is free, confidential, and it works. That message, treatment's free.
Is your rent money to gamble?
Sorry?
That's a call for help. Lying to hide your gambling? That's a call for help.
Friends worried about your gambling? That's a call for help.
Can't stop thinking about gambling? That's a call for help.
Getting your life back starts with a call for help. Treatment is free, confidential, and it works.
There are series.
I've never seen these ads. When are they played?
The first time they ran was in December, and we run them about every 2 months. They're on the air for a week. So we could get you a schedule of when they're on the air.
I see.
It's probably after we're asleep.
What's your media buy budget for these?
I can speak to the entire problem gambling budget, which is not just these ads. We have another campaign that I will talk about. But we spend 0.5% of sales on our Oregon Wins and Problem Gambling ads, and for last year or for the existing year, our media budget, well, our budget for producing and running and printing brochures is $1.9
million. And that includes the media buy somewhere in the
1.9? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Vice Chairwoman.
Thank you very much. Concerning the gambling treatment, and do you try to treat the people from the video poker problem, or anyone, even the Indian tribes, the problems coming from there, you treat all of them or anyone without asking any questions?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, the Oregon Lottery's goal is to deliver messages to the public. Certainly we're trying to reach our players, but we, in our messages, we don't distinguish between what products someone may play, because honestly we have a variety of products, and our messaging really has more to deal with behavior that would indicate someone has a gambling problem and referencing the helpline number. So we're really not trying to target any particular individual or any particular product with our messaging.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
And so you don't have any sense whether the problem gambling coming from the video poker or the Indian tribes, since the revenue generated from the video poker is about 60% around, and 30-some percent from the Indian tribes, apparently, yes. Okay, thank you very much. And then I'm sure that the problem comes from both or various places. My logical question is, do you think we should get some money from the Indian tribes for this treatment of these problems?
Chair Witt, Representative Lim, the Oregon Lottery doesn't take a position on where the money should come from. I think that's directed by the legislature. What I can say is, in the Problem Gambling Addiction Treatment Foundation, that there is tribal representative on that foundation, and the Spirit Mountain Community Foundation has contributed money to some research. But that isn't something that the Oregon Lottery takes a position on.
Okay, thank you.
So with that campaign, again, the goal is to encourage people to call for treatment. There's another campaign that we introduced when line games were introduced into the marketplace that really spoke more to educating our players, the general public, that when you gamble, there are inherent risks unless you are conscious of managing your play. And this is in conjunction with what Director Penn referred to, that on the VLTs themselves, we moved to putting time of day clocks on every game, because one of the things that can happen is people lose track of time. And we changed credits to also be represented as dollars and cents, so it became something that was more apparent that this is money that they're playing with. And the campaign that followed along with that talks to people about the fact that when you gamble, there can be risks, and there are things that you can do when you play that you should think about, which is setting a time limit, setting a budget, thinking of the money you lose as the cost of entertainment. And that is our, we call it our moderation campaign, and we are currently working on a new version of that, which is coming out March 5th, which is the beginning of Problem Gambling Awareness Week, which is a national event. And this is a little bit different slant that really talks more directly to the nature of the game itself. And the messaging of that campaign, what you'll see, not to spoil the surprise, but there's a fellow who is clearly playing a game of some sort, and he has two heads come out, and they are arguing with him. Essentially, you could think of it as his conscience that is talking about, you know, we're about to win, let's not quit, and the other one's saying, but they're waiting for us, we need to go. And the message is that gambling can put you at odds with yourself. So when you play, set a time limit, set a budget, and don't let the game play you, which is really a little bit different angle that's saying, you know, there's something about the game that you should be aware of, that you need to be setting limits for yourself when you play. We have attached to that a number that is not the 8772-STOP-NOW, it's my limit. And it goes to the same helpline service, but tagging it with a different number that maybe talks to maybe a casual player that doesn't need to go into treatment but really wants to understand how to manage play. It still sends them to the helpline, and it allows us to track the effectiveness of our different campaign messages and who we're reaching. The other couple of programs that we have is we maintain an OregonLotteryHelp.org website that echoes our campaign messages. It's used by people all over the state, and there are maps to local treatment providers. There's direct phone numbers, and this is just another service that we offer by maintaining that information on our site. And we do train our retailers. We train them on the issue of recognizing a problem gambling sign. We require that they post helpline information. We give them recommendations on how they might talk to someone that they believe has a problem. And that is something that we have a goal annually to train 100% of our new retailers on the issues of problem gambling. And that's it, unless you have questions.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask the committee members to hold their questions until our final panelist has had an opportunity to make her statement. If you would, please.
And we do have some other folks here composing another panel. We want to make sure we have time for those folks. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Wheat and Chair Tomei and all the representatives. It's an honor to be here. I'm representing the providers in Oregon. I have been a counselor, gambling addictions counselor, for 6 years specifically. I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I have done over 8,000 hours of direct client contact with gamblers and their families. And the problem is definitely a public health issue. I have seen many clients. In fact, what I think my work is, to me, it's similar like an ER hospital. People, when they come to us, they are in crisis. Many of them are even thinking about killing themselves, like you saw in Dr. Jeff Morales' slides. And my work, I have the privilege to help them, you know, to come out of the addiction. As you saw, 81%, we have 81% success rate in our treatments. And I want to give time for the people who really have the problem or had the problem to speak to you. So, but I would like to request for you to think about making sure that 1%, to assure us providers that 1% is indeed totally direct to treatment. I like the idea of 2%. I think we could use that 2%. In fact, I almost jumped out of my chair but to assure at least the 1% to go towards treatment and prevention. I'm a coordinator for Multnomah County in prevention and outreach. And it has been really helpful because many people that I teach, you know, they're educated about gambling. They don't know about the severity, the implications of gambling addiction, the impact in our society. So I have the privilege to do that, and I will be open to anyone to discuss more about that later on, or even other business. Anybody that you know, I am open to do that. So that's my request, really, to make sure the assurance of 1%. Just one example, I think it was 3 years ago, the 1% wasn't given to us. It was, 0.7%, or I don't know the exact amount. In our treatment, we have the largest. I work for Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, the largest treatment in Oregon. And we have been told the largest in the nation. We see 150 clients per week. And however, we could not expand anymore. In fact, one of our counselors left. We didn't have money to replace the counselor, actually two counselors, because that biennium we had less money to deal with. So if you could make a difference by assuring that we have the 1% for treatment, it would be greatly appreciated by the providers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before I dismiss this panel, could I see a quick show of hands of clients who have traveled from out of town and for whatever reason couldn't return? We have three folks. Panel members, thank you so very, very much. If we could rely on you and be able to call on you as we hear this bill again in the future, I would like that assurance very much. Thank you so very much. And committee members, I apologize for moving this along, but I would like to be able to have our clients come up. Thank you again, and we appreciate the information that you provided our committees. Good morning and welcome. Thank you for your patience.
Good morning.
If you could all do just a couple minutes each, I know that's very sure. difficult, but we would like to hear from all three of you.
My name is Elizabeth Joanne Cato. I'm a typical mom. I've worked at kids' school. I'm 54 years old. I've been married for 34 years. About 5 years ago, I started gambling just socially. And that went in about 6 months to a pathological gambler. I lost my family's home that my children grew up in. I gambled it away. We're in debt to the tune of probably $750,000. And this is on video poker. I'm not a casino player. What brought me to Cascadia is attempted suicide. My children convinced me not to kill myself. I promised them I wouldn't, so I had to find help. And I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to have help. I was one of the first people that was down in the inpatient treatment center in Salem. I was able to find out who I was again. I didn't gamble for action. I gambled to numb out. To forget, to not feel. You guys have given the counselors the ability to give me the ability to find those feelings again, whether they be good or bad, at least I'm feeling. And I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you so much for your statement.
Hello, I'm Michael Sears. I'm a chef, a food director. Been in gambling, a problem gambler, I would say for 5 years. And I would say within the last 3 months of my gambling, I lost $40,000. I'm a casino gambler. I play one game. I'm scared to death to look at the slot machines or the video poker. That's the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm a gambler, and they scare me. I mean, I've seen a lot of people come into treatment, and those guys have a hard road. I mean, I have to drive 30 minutes to get to a gambling place. They go around the corner, and it's there. On the way to Cascadia, where I am, you can't imagine how many people have failed just down the block on their way to gambling counseling. I'm considered a success. I haven't gambled in 3 years. Now, the only reason I'm here is my daughter asked me to come. Sorry. It doesn't work. But you also have to understand it takes an immense amount of time on our part, their part. We have to put a lot of effort. Sorry.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sears. Thank you very much.
I'm Andrew Preble. I'm a compulsive gambler, and I'm also an alcoholic. I had actually 20 years of sobriety before I developed a problem with gambling. I will tell you, first of all, that getting rid of a gambling problem is way more difficult than drinking. It's not even close. It's not even in a ballpark. Basically, I waited till I was 50 years old, and in the last 6 years, about 3 of it was spent gambling. I didn't lose as much as this young lady to the left, but I lost way more than that $23,000 average that they talked about. The only area that I've had dishonesty in my marriage is about my gambling. Other than how does this hairdo look and how does this dress make me look? Maybe I'm not totally honest with that one. But I just had a couple of things. First of all, I am not only able and willing, but would love an opportunity to come down and address this panel again, okay? Because we could spend hours talking about this, or if you're looking for people on your task force other than representatives, I'd be happy to volunteer my time on a task force or to address them. But a couple of things that I just noticed, was, I know you're getting close here. Right. When we first voted in the lottery, there was supposed to be 2% of the money was supposed to go towards gambling treatment. That was voted in before the first lottery machines hit the things that had already been taken out by the legislature. So the people voted assuming that we'd have 2% of money would go to recovery, and we did not. I think when they talked about that 50-50 rule as far as income, I think if you go into many of these quote-unquote delis and take a look around, you'll see that nowhere near 50% of the money comes from other than gambling. Maybe they take a look at what the net is that the actually place pulls in, what their profit is. But if you look at gross dollars, you can walk into some of these delis and there'll be six people sitting at machines with one Coke sitting there. It's not even close to a 50%. And that, if that's not a casino, I don't know what is. And they're available all over the place. Absolutely all over the place. If you take a look at the advertising for gambling that is around, I go down south on business. I drive from, once I hit Salem going down to Roseburg, I hit about 7 to 10 signs for the casino down in that area. Not to mention the number of signs between Portland and here. I think I saw 3 signs that advertised scratch-offs, Powerball, and other types of things. I travel back east on business. I don't know if you know this, but New Jersey has a town called Atlantic City that has a casino or two in it. There is way more billboard advertising in Oregon for gambling than there is in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. It's absolutely not even close. Even in Connecticut, which has the largest Indian casino, the first and largest Indian casino in the country, driving through the entire state of Massachusetts and Connecticut on one road, I saw one billboard for the Foxwood Casino. Okay. When you leave, if you're driving east, when you leave from Spirit Mountain, there's a billboard up there for the Pendleton Casino. Okay? We look everywhere you look. It's this is what the lottery dollars give you. Look at this. We get your parks. We get this. We get everything else. The areas that is affected by compulsive gamblers is not only the compulsive gambler and the family. It's been touched on briefly. How many little leagues have we seen that have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars that their treasurers have taken? I know a couple people have touched on that. West Lynn had their treasurer or something that took thousands of dollars. How many Boy Scout organizations? How many people that go bankrupt that affect credit card companies? Credit, you know, local people that they owe business to, if they're a small business person, and now when they go bankrupt, people that they have gotten credit from to accept their money now are out that money, you know. I have talked to many, many, many people that have gone bankrupt, okay. It is something that I probably could have done, and I choose not to, all right. And my guess is that, you know, hopefully I won't have to ever at any point. And I think that if you really wanted to get an idea of how deep this problem is, gambling is in this state, There are many GA meetings that are open, which means you don't have to be a gambler to go to the GA meetings. You can go to www.gamblersanonymous.org, and they'll give you a meeting directory under Oregon. Perhaps you could go to some of these meetings and listen to some of the stories. My assumption is if you took a poll of people that are in some of these classes that Cascadia has and other people have to offer, that we'd be more than happy to have you come in and to listen to some of the stories. And if you're going into some Dotties and Josephs and whatnot, and take a look in there, and that's going to give you a really good idea. That's going to give you some. We can talk about these statistics. I certainly believe that the percentage of problem gamblers we have and the amount of impact is way higher because that was for casinos. What, again, like you said, Chair Tomey, every block you might have three places that you can stop in and play line games or video poker, and they all have that little finger crossing and all over the place. We are constantly bombarded with this, and it's not a problem that goes away. I had 18 months of abstinence and went back out for a year and a half, okay, and then struggled and got 9 months of abstinence and then went back out. Now I only have 60 days, right, you know. So there's, you know, it's an ongoing problem. It doesn't go away, and it is nothing, nowhere close to what it takes as far as a recovering alcoholic goes. And I really would love an opportunity to come back and speak again when you had more time.
Colleagues, this committee, they're through. They have only until 10 o'clock. We can stay longer if our committee would like to hear more testimony from these folks or other people regarding the gambling problem. Are you willing to stay on, say, for another however long?
Sure.
Oh, wonderful. Great.
Madam Chair, I'm going to need to
leave. I know you will need to leave.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. I'm going to gavel our committee closed. I am certain that Chair Tomei would be more than welcome any of you who wish to remain and stay on. Before I close my committee's hearing, I want to thank all of you so very, very much for such powerful and compelling statements. And would also like to thank Vice Chair Lim for bringing this bill forward. And quite frankly, this chair has been shocked by what he's heard here today. Your statements have been so revealing, so powerful, and I never realized the extent to which gambling is a problem in this state. Based on the kind of information that Dr. Marotta and his panel brought to us. So I'm very, very appreciative of everyone's time here today. I know that sharing some of your life stories are difficult, but let me assure you that the statements that you have made have definitely made an impact. With that, I want to again thank everyone for the statements they have made. I want to thank both committees for this, what I think is a very important public hearing. And Workforce and Economic Development Committee is now adjourned.
Thank you. Well, given I can understand that. And for those of you who are electing to stay, we appreciate it and thank you very much, Chair. You bet. Yes. I was on the interim committee on transportation and economic development, and that was the first time that I'd heard Dr. Marotta speaking. And I've had personal experience with very close friends who've had addiction problems in their families. And the combination of my personal experience and hearing Dr. Marotta has made me very concerned about this issue. And so I'm hoping that our committee will be able to do more work on this issue, and I would certainly like to hear more information. I know, Mr. Sears, you stopped your testimony, and I wanted you to be able to continue.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break up that way. As I said, I'm a success, at least at Cascadia. I've been 3 years, and I haven't gone back to gambling. But the amount of effort it takes is amazing. I mean, and the only thing that keeps me going is those meetings and my daughter, my wife. What I found, though, is it's my form of gambling, I'm lucky. I do casinos. And the only thing that saves me is I don't have the lottery. I can't even look at those machines because they scare me. I can't imagine doing that. I mean, they're too close. They're every block. They're, like I said, the advertisement is amazing. I did see the stop
commercial. And that's why I called. But that was a fluke. It just happened that time. And when my wife and I were at a major critical point, I've been married 27 years. And the only reason I can survive is because of her. But what I found is the helmet, you know, the treatment program that I go through. Now, I've done GA and treatment. For me, GA works best. I mean, treatment works best. It's usually a combination of both of them. One's more spiritual, one's more educational. At least that's the way I interpret it. But it's an ongoing thing. Now, what I've done for the last 3 years, for me, to give hope to the new guys that come in, and I've found that the guys that are doing the slot machines and the video poker are having the hardest time, a lot more than me. I mean, they relapse more often. Now, I'm basically pretty soon phasing out of Cascadia because of budget problems and stuff like that. They consider me a success, so after basically the new program is 2 years, you know, they phase you out. Now, I've been told if I gamble, I can come back again. To me, it's a failure. I mean, that's sad. But, you know, I can come back for the annual monthly meeting. That's fine. But see, for me, what keeps me going is actually giving help to others. And I'm sure with you too. Our biggest thing we do is support our other groups. Now, there are so many people that have it reported. Now, we're the people that it's either life or death. I mean, our families are breaking up. Our businesses are failing. I mean, these are people. But there are tons of people out there that survive. They have enough cash to hide their problems. If they have enough cash, it's not critical. The only reason I got caught, my wife and I had really had major issues, is I almost ran out of my money. I mean, I had a home equity loan. I could have went $80,000 in a heartbeat. But my last 3 months, see, gambling wasn't the problem. That was my medicine. That's what hid my problem. And people, you know, on committees and stuff, they understand about gambling. But they really don't understand that, for me, it wasn't the problem. That's how I solved my problem. That's how I hid from it. That's where I got numb, was gambling. You know, it wasn't a money issue. It wasn't anything. It was just that I picked that instead of alcohol, instead of drugs, instead of all the other outs. And it is a chemical. It acts just the same. For me, I could totally turn off my brain going to gambling. And after my last 3 months, I was basically third person. I was sitting over there watching myself gamble. And money wasn't an issue. I mean, I went through $40,000 in 4 months. And that's with winning and losing. I mean, you know, I actually won some too, so that's a lot of money. That's not just $40,000. That's probably a couple hundred thousand if you count my winnings. I mean, but, and like him, I wouldn't mind being on any committee to help.
Great. Thank
that's
you. Thank
what
you.
I have. If you have questions, please ask.
Questions at this
point? Sure.
Yes.
My question is for any one of you three, but thanks so much for sharing that. We have become so dependent upon this revenue stream throughout our nation. Let's face it. If you had a chance to wave the magic wand, or better yet, let's go beyond that. What do you feel down deep inside now that you've been there and you're at in your life today where you're at? I mean, what would you do? What do you see us doing?
I don't see you giving up the revenue. I don't think that's a possibility. And unlike some of the people here, I think that the word addiction should be emphasized more. In my life, I've had a chronic pain problem for 25 years. There's alcoholism in my family. I don't drink.
Yeah.
My prescription for pain pills have increased one pill in 25 years because that was an addiction. Who knew gambling would be an addiction? I didn't. It's not out in the public. People think it's a problem, and for most people it can be just a problem. For the few of us that it's an addiction, we have no idea that it is an addiction. I hid my gambling for 4 years. I told myself I was going to commit suicide because of my pain problem. My children were older, and that they would understand. My children made it very clear that they would not understand, and at that point I had to admit that I had a gambling problem, an addiction. I came back, I called Cascadia. They had a cancellation on the day I called, which was a good thing, because who knows if I would have gone if I had to wait. I was one of the first people that went down to the inpatient program in Salem. It allowed me to stop being a thing and become a person again. I was somebody's wife. I was somebody's mother. But I was not me. My marriage is in very deep trouble, because once I found out who I was, I'm not sure my husband really likes that person. I'm not the quiet, meek person that's just going to sit by and get run over anymore. They have made all the difference in my life, because now I can live. I know I have one choice to live, and that's not to gamble. And in order not to gamble, that means I need to go to treatment. And I go 3 times a week. I go to 2 groups at Cascadia and one-on-one with a counselor at Cascadia. I go to GA meetings. And that's going to be a lifetime thing. Because if I stop doing that, I will start gambling and I will end up killing myself. I hope we'd make a difference. I would love to help any way I can. Unfortunately, I have no car anymore. I take the bus. But I hope you guys hear what's being said and make sure they get the money for treatment.
I hear your office from 3 of you that you're willing to help, and I would assume that somewhere we have your names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, and that kind of thing.
Can I say one quick thing? I mean, one thing I've heard in committees over time is, you know, budgets and money coming in. See, one thing I've noticed that when you talk about revenues from gambling, people assume that's new money. That's money that's diverted. It's not new money. There is no new money. The state gets new income, but it comes from somewhere. Mm-hmm. It comes from our house payments. It comes from our jobs. I mean, this is not new money. And everybody talks budget, says, oh, we got this new money. But there is no such thing. It's being diverted from other sources, and it's hurting the state. I mean, these people that are embezzling, I don't know about you, but I've never known a criminal before. Since I'm in this program, I know probably 30 of them that have been in jail, have come out of this, and done things to support their gambling. I don't associate with gamblers. I mean, criminals, but I do now, and it's scary. I mean, they scare the heck out of me. I don't want to be one, but I could have been.
I'd like to make a little addition to your question there, Representative Wilson, if I may. Also, I do think, you know, the state has become very dependent on gambling funds. You know, I mean, the state's addicted to gambling again back in 2003 or whatever it was, when they said, gee, we don't have enough money, we'll take some away from the recovery program, and they did. You know, the money was there, and they took like 30% away from it, and they actually had it to the point where we weren't supposed to, you know, we were supposed to go for, I don't know, 40 hours or something like that and be cured. Yeah, like, that's going to happen, you know. And, you know, the addition of the line games just shows exactly how far the state is willing to take the addiction. You know, I think that, you know, if I think that the state needs to find a way to wean itself off gambling money. Now, just like they said, that if you gave us an extra, you know, gave us 2% today, it might take us a while to ramp up, you know, the recovery programs to ramp up. I'll guarantee you they could. Okay. I think the state needs to do the same thing. It's not like they can just say, oops, we're going to cancel all gambling games tomorrow. You know, what we're going to do is that I think that you need to learn how to somehow figure a way to wean yourself off of it, at least reduce it dramatically. Maybe it'll never totally go away. And when I hear these arguments come up, when people talk about that, the biggest argument I hear is not about the compulsive gambler, But it's, gee, how about these poor retailers that depend upon this money? Okay, I used to own a tavern many years ago, all right, and I had to make my money on, you know, which I don't anymore because I'm an alcoholic, but on selling beer and selling sandwiches and supplying good service. I know many owners of taverns now, they don't care if they never sell a drink or never sell a sandwich. They absolutely don't care because they make so much money on the lottery machines, you know. But we hear more about the concern about retailers losing some of their income than we hear about what's going on with the problem gamblers that we have throughout our society.
I have a couple of questions. One of them is, I'd like to know how you accessed the treatment programs, and I'd like to, it's going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle, at least at this point. And how can we better make possible for other people to get treatment who are problem gamblers? What do we need to do outreach to find those folks?
I think a more consistent advertising program, like they talked about, that, you know, every 2 months they run them. I, at one point, before I really had much of a gambling problem, that 1-877-2-STOP-NOW stuck in my head, and I actually was driving from Lincoln City. I'm a casino gambler also, but I always seem to be able to find time to drive to a casino if I want to gamble. I was actually driving from Lincoln City in tears. Most of this emotion you saw here is not a rarity. This happens all the time with people, and we all have. So I'm driving back from Chinook Winds, and I've got tears coming down my eyes, and I'm waiting for my phone to come on, which just so happens to come on right about as I hit Spirit Mountain, and I got the service again. That must have been an omen. But I made it past Spirit Mountain, and I called at 877-2-STOP-NOW at, I don't know, 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. So to the extent that's a good campaign and people remember that number, but I think that I listened to the gentleman from the Lottery Commission talk about ways to increase funding or try to find ways not to put money into recovery programs. I wish the Lottery Commission would look for ways to put money into it and put money into a more extensive advertising campaign, not only on television but radio, because some of the ads are very good. I mean, I've seen some of his ads, and they're very good. But, you know, sports pages. I mean, a lot of gamblers are into sports, you know, okay? Sports pages, you know, living section in newspapers, you know. You saw that there's more women gamblers, problem gamblers, than men, you know, which is, you know, kind of was a surprise when I first heard that, you know. So women probably don't read the sports page as much as men. I don't want to, you know, put anybody in a box there, but there are other areas, and I think there should be ads in the newspaper, and I just think, you know, let's take half of the lottery ads that tell you how much money's in the Powerball or to use a scratch-off ticket and put that 877 number up there. You know, let's limit the number of billboards that a casino can have up along the roads. I mean, I know we get into free trade, and there might be some problems there, but let's put up more billboards around to let people know about it, you know?
Yeah. One issue that it is, you know, they're doing the middle ad, the one that's, you know, watch your time, watch your budget. Now, if you have a problem, those ads are saying, this is okay, go for it. I mean, that is a positive gambling. That's how we see it. That means it's okay to gamble, but you need to seem to adjust what you do and fix it by doing this. They don't help us.
What would help you?
The more of the stop ads. I mean, the ads, the one that I just saw, I never saw that one. I like that one. You have to go across the board. I mean, in casinos, there's more Orientals than I've ever seen in my life in gambling. They need to focus on Orientals in casinos. I mean, I don't know if that's an odd thing, but I've noticed it. I mean, Caucasians, there are certain groups that go for certain gambles. I think we need to find out who they are and then design a marketing program for that particular group in that particular gambling establishment. If it's a casino and we have an Oriole base, it needs to focus on that. Not Mr. White Guy, I'm sorry, you know, in a casino. I mean, if you look at the ads, they're all Caucasian, they're beautiful blondes, and that isn't who's there. Okay, in bars, who's gambling? I mean, yes, it does, but there are specific amount of people who are doing it. A salesman, good example. We find tons of salesmen who are problem gamblers. focus on it. I mean, you don't. We see it in where we're at because we see the people around us, the problem gamblers, and we find out, oh, there's a lot of common stuff in here. I mean, salesmen are amazing amount of gamblers, okay? Maybe it's just who we are. But and professional, there are very few down-and-out people, but they're the ones that are almost gone. I mean, they're about ready to die in our treatment program, and it's very serious. And, you know, we try to help those people. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, I think of myself as, you know, I hate, in my group, I'm the oldest guy there. I mean, the longest person who hasn't gambled. And not too long ago, I wasn't. And it really feels funny being the senior guy. And I still have, you know, some controversy. And I don't like to be the number one guy. But in my group, I am. And it's really sad.
One of the things that I've noticed, too, is being a video poker player, we had the numbers there by the machines. None of us looked at them. They said they put the credits or dollars. I can't remember anybody putting it on the dollar. If they want to actually do something, they need to not give you the option to put the dollar amount to credits. Because at this point, when you're a pathological gambler, it's not money. It's just credit. It's just to keep the numbness going. The medication is the credits to keep you playing. They talk about how they help people, train them to spot problem gamblers. I had nobody ever come up to me when I'm putting my $500 into a machine in 2 hours to say, you might have a problem. They talk about budget. Okay, I think every gambler is budgeted themselves. I take $20 in and put the rest of the money in the glove box.
Oh,
I've got the key. Time. I was careful with my time because I hid my gambling. I didn't lose track of the time. Spending less time with my family. I had a daughter that was away at college, and towards the end of my gambling, she would call on my cell phone, and I would literally mute it and not take the call. My children are the most important things to me in the world. They're why I am alive. So for me to mute my daughter's phone call, it's just unbelievable the hold this can get on you. One of the hardest things I had to do was admit to my daughter that I did that to her. And one of the things you have to do is become honest with yourself and with others if you want to beat the gambling. I think I lied to myself more than anybody, but I lied to a whole lot of people.
Sure.
And I have to make it right. And to tell my daughter that when she would call and that I would not take her call was pretty hard for a mother to admit.
Mrs. Cato, how did you find the treatment services?
They've saved my life. The treatment, outpatient treatment at Cascadia is ongoing.
How did you find it?
I found it because my sister-in-law, who is a social worker, gave me a group of papers, including Cascadia, and Cascadia was one of the few that had family services on it.
So at that point, you admitted that you had a problem, and you had asked your sister to help you?
Yeah.
Okay.
My sister-in-law. But I didn't admit the problem until my children made me promise not to kill myself.
I think one of the things to go along with what you said about recognizing people that don't gamble, I know a couple people that work, and it's funny, like, you know, Sherry's and Elmer's all have gambling now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's even and Gresham, the Polar little drive-in there, has a little gambling room. Well, I know a couple people that work in those places. One of the things that they do is if the tables are available, they want them to seat them closer to the gambling room. Okay, and then they're encouraged to go and kind of just be chummy with people that are in the lottery room and gambling. You know, so they're not encouraged to find the trouble. They're encouraged to go in there, and a lot of their pay is based on that. But one of the other things I want to say, I think that part of what needs to be done is I think there's a real lack of understanding as to what gambling is. You know, we talked a little bit about whether or not it's an addiction. I personally think that they should call it an addiction. Okay. yes, it's easy to say that I'm an alcoholic because if I take a beer and consume it, that makes me do something. Or if I take a pipe and smoke crack, which thank God I've never tried because I know people that have, okay, that makes me an addict. Or heroin and you shoot it up and that makes you an addict. Well, with gambling, you don't take anything into your system. Okay, but it reacts just the same way or even different. It still makes your body produce the same type of chemicals that alcohol or drugs will make you if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict. It gives you those same types of things. I don't think people understand it. Just, you know, when I quit drinking, I was proud of the fact that I was a recovering alcoholic. I tell almost nobody that I'm a compulsive gambler. That there are I have now told more people other than my immediate family or people I'm in treatment with that I'm a compulsive gambler. I don't tell my friends or people or anything along that line because there is a larger amount of shame that goes with being a compulsive gambler than being with and recognizing your problem and doing something about it than being a drug addict or an alcoholic that recognizes, you know, you're gung-ho, hey man, you're a recovering alcoholic, you've done a great job. You have a gambling problem? How can you have a gambling problem? All you got to do is get up and push yourself away from the table and go away. And it's not that easy. I cannot tell you the number of times that the only machine I won at the casino was the ATM machine because when I put my debit card in there, it gave me money. You know, and I would be walking to the machine saying, how stupid is this? How stupid is this? Yeah. Didn't matter. The card went in, the buttons got pushed, and the $100 bills came out, and I said, I can go throw some more craps. It truly is an addiction, and I think that the state needs a better understanding of exactly what it is and what it does to people.
I have one more thing.
Okay.
Do you know right now all three of us can have we can be buzzed just thinking about gambling. I mean, right now, us talking about it has nothing to do with pulling the machine.
Right.
We can totally be buzzed to the point of where we are in front of a machine just by thinking about it, because our brains can produce the serotonin and the
dopamines
right here in front of you. In fact, probably talking about it has upped our level a little bit. And it's so odd because I don't need to shoot things. I don't need to pull a machine. I know in my head I can get myself off just by thinking about it.
And it's,
can you do that? We can. And dreams at night, you wake up and you feel guilty and you're buzzed just for a little dream.
I know that you stayed longer than you planned, but just one other, if I may, I'm sorry, but I really appreciate, and I also appreciate Representative Lynn, you taking a lead on this, and I'm glad I live almost in Gresham. It makes me proud. But an emotional cycle I would go through, I'm driving to the casino, as I get about 15 or 20 minutes away, you know, that adrenaline's starting to pump. Mm-hmm. Okay, I go in there and I play, lose my money, lose more money, lose more money until the machine says it won't give me any more, okay? But when I leave the casino, I'm kicking myself in the butt and calling myself a fool and saying, how can I do this? I don't have this money to waste, okay? Within half an hour of leaving the casino, I'm also in my mind going through ways that I'm going to get the more money to come back to the casino. That's the emotional swings that you can make inside of a few hours.
Mm-hmm. And that's very true. And mine is just the corner store.
Yeah.
I don't have to go far.
Right. Thank you so much. As we were preparing this panel today, we were aware that it would be difficult to get any folks who have this issue to come and testify.
You would have got a whole group.
We could fill this room.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Seriously.
Give us a whole day and let us know.
We can bring a bus.
How many you want?
Yeah.
What I was told was it would be difficult because of the embarrassment.
No.
Well, thank you.
I could get a busload.
Yeah, now. I mean, beginning of this.
Because you are right. There is an embarrassment.
Yes. Yeah. And the point is, you know, I'm embarrassed. Like I said, I had asked my daughter. If she said no, I wouldn't be in here. But I had to come.
My wife called me to tell her that she was proud that I would come down here and speak about this, and I appreciate
my daughter, too.
Because it is difficult. But, yeah, we could fill this room up for you real easy. I could go out there and start making some calls, and we could do it this afternoon.
We have phone lists. That's one of our little things we do.
And my son and daughter said, come down and do it. Great. But, once again, I would not have done it had they said no.
See, we think we're the only people. When we're gambling, we have an issue. We really believe we're bad, and there's only one of us.
Yes.
I'm the only one that gambles, and I have a problem. I didn't know he exists. I ran into him 3 years ago, and I ran into her probably a year ago.
I mean, I didn't know these guys exist. I thought I was really the only one. And he thought the same thing. That's why this is such an odd thing. Because we're such a tight community, we don't think there are of us out there. We need to know that.
Yes.
That this is an issue that is something that, you know, there are more of us out there.
It needs to be made a point that it is not just a problem, that there are some of us that it is an addiction for, because I would never have gambled the same way I don't drink.
Yeah, I don't drink or take drugs either.
Thank you so much. You were
we appreciate your
fantastic
time.
Fantastic. Yeah, any last questions before?
Madam Chair?
Well, just a minute, Representative. Yes, Representative Cowan. I mean, Maurer. One last question.
It's actually not a question, it's a comment. I find it interesting. This debate might be very different if you substituted payday loan for Oregon Lottery.
We didn't even get into that.
Oh, that's a big issue.
Yes.
No, I'm talking literally. Substitute the words Oregon Lottery with payday loans.
But they go together, and we'll have that at the next
absolutely.
Hearing.
That is a big thing.
Last question, Representative.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank you for all of you that they coming out, and it's really encouraging to hear three of you. And I have three bills that in conjunction with lottery, such as ban on television ad. That's the first thing. I'm sure one of you that signed on this one as co-sponsor. And limiting the ad to 0.5% instead of a full 1%. And another one that any one person cannot own more than 5 of the the joint. The Dottie, they own about 20 of them, something. You know.
No, Dottie's, yeah. Well, the company itself may own, but there's only 6 allowed in each establishment.
Yeah, 6 machines, but you're talking about the number of locations.
Number of locations.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, they're all over. Yeah.
At least I'm trying to do the limit, not eliminating, and try to limit it, hopefully make it better.
That's a good step.
You have to stop the bleeding first.
Yeah, that's
well,
a step.
Especially the Dotties and things. It's made a safe haven for women to go gambling.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go to a bar. You can go to your neighbor deli, and it's safer.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you. We will be continuing this. This is not our last hearing on this issue. We will be continuing.
Nice to have a forum.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you for the other people who came to testify. Thank you all.
You want to gamble,
Oh, yes. Yeah.